The Dark Web Files. Exposing the internet's hidden underbelly.
That sound, for millions of people, it's a little ping of hope. A potential match, a new conversation, maybe even the start of something real. We've all become so used to the idea of swiping for love.
Yeah, I mean, I have friends who've met their spouses on dating apps. It's completely normalized. It's just part of how people connect now. And that's why this topic for me is so unsettling. Because we trust these platforms. We put our hopes, our vulnerabilities out there.
Exactly. We're all looking for connection. It's a fundamental human need. But what happens when that need is weaponized? When the search for love becomes a hunting ground for criminals operating in the darkest corners of the internet?
And that's what we're exploring today. We're not talking about your average bad date or someone who lied about their height. We're going much, much deeper.
Today, we're delving into the intersection of the online dating industry and the dark web. We're going to expose how cybercriminals are systematically exploiting our quest for love for profit.
We'll be talking about the hidden dangers, the sophisticated scams that lead to what we're calling the invisible heartbreak. A kind of devastation that goes far beyond just a broken heart. It involves financial ruin, identity theft, and profound psychological trauma.
So, the question we're asking today is, in a world where you can find love with a swipe, how do you know the person on the other side is even real?
And that's the terrifying part, isn't it? The answer to your question is, you often can't know. Not at first. The entire infrastructure for creating a believable fake persona is not just some cottage industry anymore. It's a global, highly sophisticated market.
It's more than a market. In some cases, it's baked into the very business model of the platforms themselves. We tend to think of fake profiles as being run by, you know, lone wolf scammers. But court documents tell a very different story. There have been major class action lawsuits. Match.com was a big one. Alleging that a huge percentage of profiles, maybe even more than half, were inactive or straight-up fraudulent.
Wait, fraudulent profiles created by the company?
Not always created by them, but knowingly left up to inflate their numbers, to make the pond look more stocked than it actually is. But then you have cases that are even more blatant. The Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, went after a company called JDI Dating for this exact thing.
Oh, I think I remember hearing something about this.
They found the company was creating what they called, and this is the company's term, virtual cupids. These were completely fake, computer-generated profiles. A new user signs up, and almost immediately, ping, they get a message from an attractive person nearby.
Ah, the hook. To get you to pay.
It's the hook. You can't reply to that virtual cupid without upgrading to a paid membership. So the very platform you're trusting to connect you with real people is, in fact, the first one to lie to you.
That is deeply cynical. It sets a precedent, doesn't it? It normalizes the idea that the person you're talking to might not be who they say they are, because the platform itself is playing that game.
It creates the perfect camouflage. If the site is already populated with these bait profiles, it becomes exponentially harder for a user, or even the platform's moderators, to distinguish a corporate bot from a criminal's meticulously crafted fake identity.
So, where do the criminals get their material? I mean, to be convincing, you need more than just one stolen photo. You need a life. You need vacation pictures, photos with friends, little stories.
And you can buy all of it. On dark web forums, sellers offer what they call scam packs, or dating profile kits. For a few $100 in cryptocurrency, you get a complete identity.
A complete identity.
Dozens, sometimes hundreds of high-resolution photos scraped from a real person's Instagram or Facebook. Their name, their job, details about their family, even pre-written scripts for conversations. Here's how to build trust for the first week. Here's how to introduce the idea you need money for a medical emergency. It's a plug-and-play kit for breaking someone's heart and emptying their bank account.
My God. So the person whose life has been stolen, they have no idea they've become the face of a criminal enterprise. Their happy memories, their family photos, are being used as a weapon against someone else who's just looking for a connection.
And the victim of the scam? They're not just falling for a fake profile. they're falling for a ghost, a composite of a real stolen life, animated by a criminal who could be thousands of miles away.
That's the invisible heartbreak we were talking about. It's not just one person being deceived. It's a violation of two people simultaneously, and neither one knows the other exists.
And the sheer scale of that violation is what's so hard to grasp. It's not just a lie. It's the puppeteering of a real person's existence. The scammer isn't just inventing a character. They're hijacking a life to destroy another one.
And they do it with such methodical precision. You mentioned those scripts, those plug-and-play kits. What do they actually say? How do you script falling in love?
Well, it's less about scripting love and more about scripting vulnerability. The first phase is almost always what psychologists call love bombing. It's an overwhelming 24/7 fire hose of affection and validation.
Constant contact. Good morning texts, good night texts, thinking of you messages.
Exactly. The script provides lines that create an intense, accelerated intimacy. Things like, I've never felt this way before, or I feel like I can tell you anything. They mirror the victim's hopes and dreams back at them, creating a perfect echo chamber. The victim feels seen, heard, understood in a way they never have before.
So it's a dependency trap. They're not just building a relationship. They're making themselves the absolute center of the victim's emotional world, the one source of that incredible high.
It becomes an addiction. And once that dependency is established, the script moves to phase two, introducing the problem, the crisis.
The medical emergency you mentioned.
Or a business deal gone wrong. Or they're working on an oil rig and their equipment is damaged. It's always something that is, one, urgent, two, requires money to solve, and three, crucially, prevents them from meeting in person or even video chatting.
Ah, so the crisis serves a dual purpose. It's the pretext for asking for money, but it's also the perfect excuse for why the camera on their laptop is suddenly broken, or why they're in a location with a terrible signal.
It maintains the illusion. And the first ask is never for a huge amount. It's a test. Maybe a few $100 for a plane ticket to come see you that, of course, gets canceled at the last minute because of the crisis.
And if the victim pays, they're invested. They've put skin in the game. It becomes harder to admit to yourself that it might be a lie because now you've lost money on top of your emotional investment.
It's the sunk cost fallacy, weaponized. The scripts are designed to escalate. The problems get bigger. The amounts get larger. And any doubt expressed by the victim is met with carefully scripted emotional manipulation.
What do you mean? Like, they get angry?
Sometimes. But more often, it's guilt. The script will have lines like, or they'll turn it into a test of love. If you really loved me, you'd help me. They turn the victim's own skepticism into a weapon against them.
So the victim is now in this impossible position. Doubting the person they love feels like a betrayal. It feels like they're the one doing something wrong. That's insidious.
And that's the end game of the script. It's designed to dismantle a person's ability to trust their own instincts. Every red flag they notice, every moment of doubt, is reframed as their failure to trust, their lack of love.
It completely rewires their reality. So, what's the final act? When the victim is bled dry, financially and emotionally, what happens then?
Sometimes, but often, that's when it gets even uglier. The love evaporates, and the threats begin. The scammer might have intimate messages, photos, anything the victim shared in confidence. Now it's leverage.
Oh my God. So the invisible heartbreak isn't even the end. It's just a prelude to something worse.
For some, yes. It's a devastating 1-2 punch of emotional and financial ruin, followed by profound violation and fear. The person they thought was their soulmate becomes their tormentor.
It leaves you wondering. I mean, after everything we've talked about, from the virtual cupids to these dark web scam packs, it feels like the entire system is built on a foundation of deception. My final thought is, honestly, pretty bleak. I'm not sure these platforms can be made safe without a fundamental change to their business model, which prioritizes engagement over authenticity.
I see that. I really do. And maybe you're right. But I land in a slightly different place. I don't think the answer is to abandon the search for connection online, because for so many people, it's a lifeline. For me, the key insight from all of this is about reclaiming our own intuition.
What do you mean by that?
These scripts, this whole criminal enterprise, it works by overriding that little voice in your head that says, "This is moving too fast," or "Why is their camera always broken?" The single most powerful tool anyone has is to not just hear that voice, but to listen to it.
So, trust the hesitation.
Trust the hesitation. It's not about being cynical. It's about being self-protective. In a world of digital ghosts and stolen lives, your own gut feeling is one of the only things that's truly real.
That's a powerful thought to end on. A sobering but necessary reminder. This has been an unsettling, but I think crucial conversation. To everyone listening, thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Stay safe and trust that voice.